Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. We are less than 2 weeks away from training camp opening. So we're coming back to you after a three-week hiatus. We got a bunch of stuff to talk about our team, about the NBA rank that's going on at ESPN.com and where Hornets players fell. And we'll, of course, start our evaluation of the Western Conference, talk about each individual team. And so everybody has an idea of what the Hornets are up against this year as they make their push to become respectable once more. So, Michael, how you doing? How's Utah?
Oh, it's fabulous here, getting ready for the snow. I noticed that we just took a hiatus, coincidentally, right as we were doing that Hornets 24/7 fantasy draft. And I think you're running from me a little bit because you know I put together a super squad while you tried to build on the old model of a big man and shooters.
I knew you were going to bring this up at some point, but I'm still perfectly confident with my with the team that I made, and I like it better than anybody else's team, honestly. And actually, I think that you didn't even make the best version of your own team, because I think you, and I believe it was Mason, had like really similar teams overall, and I think Mason just was younger and a little bit nicer.
Yeah, well,
so I'm not scared.
No, it's all right. I thought it was funny that you think that model could still win in the NBA, where you have a big man and a low post presence on offense surrounded by shooters. I grew up with that model too, and it was fun in the 90s, but I don't think that we'll see a team win like that anytime in the near future.
Do you remember 3 years ago when the Magic made it to the finals?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the same NBA.
No, that was...
And that was with something called Jameer Nelson as, like, the ball handler or Hedo Turkoglu. On my team, I had Westbrook and Steph Curry. That's a major upgrade.
Yeah, that team came out of a weak Eastern Conference with the Cavs having the best record, with LeBron and a bunch of scrubs, and Hedo and Rashard Lewis got crazy hot for 2 weeks. And by the way, Jameer Nelson wasn't even on that team in the playoffs. He came back in the finals, and that's why they lost. But I don't know.
That's right. I'd forgotten that, actually.
I just think it's interesting, and I think it just made me believe even more in, you know, the fact that I know a lot of people are worried about Anthony Davis not having a low post game. But, you know, more and more as I do my off-season research, I see more David Robinson, and David Robinson had a bit of a post game, but he was really a face up center, and that's I think a guy like that could win big. So it was just interesting. It made me think of Anthony Davis, and we'll get into him a little bit with this NBA rank stuff. But I mean, I guess first of all, just to get it started, if, for those who didn't know, ESPN does the NBA rank where they rank players 1 through 500 in this kind of dead season that we're going through of the NBA right now. And I don't know, looking at the Hornets, I know when we had to do this ourselves, it really struck me. Not that I didn't already know this, but when you really have to put it, you know, pen to paper, how big of a drop there is off between this big three that we kind of talk about for the Hornets and then whoever the fourth best player is.
Yeah. I mean, the drop off between whoever, I mean, honestly, when we do this kind of rankings, it's really difficult to even pick a top three. Like all three of these guys have a claim that they could easily be the best of the three, for a lot of different reasons. But after them, I mean, who do you fall down to? Jason Smith, Robin Lopez, Grievous Vasquez, who are you falling to? And the plummet is a long way. And I'll be perfectly honest, they fall so far down that I think it should even fall further than it does on NBA rank, because in NBA rank, just the fourth best person is Robin Lopez at 169. And I don't know if that falls far enough.
All right, so we're talking a little bit about the top. Let's start backwards and work our way up. Just coming in at the bottom of the list, for those who haven't seen it, Lance Thomas and Darius Miller, two guys that as of right now are kind of fighting for that 10th, 11th spot in the front court. I guess give me the most optimistic outlook for either one of these guys this season. You know, is there any way we're looking at either of these guys being somewhere in the 200s next year?
No. The first thing I think is really funny about this particular pair is Darius Miller is listed as a center. Which I think would be news to him, and was probably news to everybody who played in Kentucky last year.
This might have been before the Hornets, you know, splurge of big men, back when Eric Gordon was saying that we didn't have any bigs.
Right.
Maybe they had Darius Miller listed as the center because we would have been so desperate at that point.
So, I mean, my expectations for Darius Miller are Quincy Pondexter. I really can't get away from that comparison in his rookie year. Now, I'm not saying that's what Darius Miller is going to be for his career. Pondexter, in order to succeed, needed to find an outside game. He hasn't found it in Memphis. Miller already had an outside game more than Pondexter had ever shown, so I think Miller may have a better shot at this. But I really don't expect Miller to do all that much. And Lance Thomas, I mean, he's on the select team for the Olympics, but he's pure energy guy. I mean, he's not any better than any other energy guy the Hornets have had. And if he's playing more than 5 minutes a game and does better than break like 400 in next year's NBA rank, I would be floored by that.
Yeah, I'm not that high on Lance Thomas either. Let me make the case for Darius Miller. So there's all these guys that come through the league. They were stars in high school. They were stars in college. And then they get to the NBA and they have to kind of do something different. I think Bruce Bowen kind of talks about this the best whenever he's on ESPN or he's been on some podcasts. And, you know, Bruce Bowen swears up and down that he, you know, could score 20 points, you know, on occasionally, sometimes 30, if he really had to. But he took a step back from his offensive game to concentrate on defense. And you want more players in the NBA to do that, and you get upset when they don't. But you have to understand their frame of mind. I mean, even somebody like Quincy Pondexter, his last year in college, he was kind of the star of that Washington team. And it's very hard to go from that to being a role player and not shooting and just concentrating on the little things that win games but maybe don't show up in the box score. Well, Darius Miller already did that in college. So, you know, he's humble. You know, the ego's gone. He knows how to do the little things. He cares about winning more than he does his own stats. I think that it's possible that he could become one of those glue guy. We always use Bruce Bowen. I wish we could find somebody, you know, Tony Allen even is very good. But there's got to be, if those guys are a nine in the defensive stopper, glue guy, you know, hustle intangible, who's like a 7.5, 8? And whoever that is, I think Miller could be there in a year or two.
Yeah, I mean, someone like Thabo Sefolosha up in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, even he's a little, that would, just a little below that. But yeah, somebody like that. But I like Miller's odds of doing it because, you know, he was I think he was the seventh best player at Kentucky. They're going to have another guy. Their backup point guard is probably going to be a top five, top 10 pick next year. So, I mean, he's already the seventh best player on a championship team. And I like his, you know, the odds for him being that guy in a year or two. So out of those two, if, you know, I know we got a question on Twitter from Tyler Nye who says, who's Monty's developmental project this season? That would be my answer. I think somebody like Darius Miller could be that kind of poor man's Bruce Bowen, which is a crazy thing to say because Bruce Bowen was always another person's poor man somebody. But you know what I mean, just be that kind of player.
And he's got the perfect situation to be that kind of player because there is nothing established in front of him. I mean, he's not established. And, I mean, Henry, unless you're playing him at small forward, he's not established. I mean, Hakeem Warwick, maybe, but I don't expect to see much of Hakeem. We'll get to him in a little bit. So, I mean, he does have the unique situation where he could end up getting big minutes. And it is a truth in the NBA that if you get big minutes, you're much more likely to be able to develop into a decent player than if you don't get the opportunities at all. So,
well, you brought up his name, so let's move to him. Xavier Henry, at the age of 21, he is plummeting down NBA rank. He shows up at 328 this year. The Twitter comment under his name is one of my favorite things that I've seen in this whole NBA rank thing. A guy tweets, remember when the pronunciation of Xavier Henry's name actually mattered? Are we getting to a point where Xavier Henry is going to be one of those guys that we see bouncing between the D League or Europe and NBA on 10-day contracts, hoping to get another shot, you know, for the
next
couple of years?
Yeah, I think we're there. I mean, so here's the one caveat I have to that. I mean, we saw him in summer league. He didn't look any different from the previous season, which isn't that much of a shock because it's what, like maybe a couple months away. You're not going to expect someone to change that quickly necessarily. The only possibility, though, is James Borrego, the coach of that team, did say that he was coming off of a back injury before summer league. And then he immediately went out right afterwards with a knee surgery. So maybe he was hurt and we didn't see a massive explosion in talent and game. But if anything, getting hurt over this summer is probably the worst possible thing that can happen to Xavier Henry. Because it's just true. If you talk to any coach, players don't necessarily add things to their games over a season. They get smarter over a season and they learn their roles, but they don't add new things to their game over a season. They do that in the off season. And if Xavier Henry's been put up, you know, in bed recuperating for most of the off season, I mean, there isn't a player in the game who needed to add something more than Xavier Henry did, because throwing yourself into the defender and hoping for a foul call isn't going to cut it. So
throw all your analytics aside and just go gut feeling. Who gets more minutes this year, Xavier Henry or Darius Miller?
Darius Miller.
All right.
I think Xavier Henry will get the first chance. And if he blows it, Darius Miller is going to beat him for the rest of the year.
Oh, so we might see Darius Miller go from center to shooting guard on his on his listing, because we're going to need somebody to play in the backcourt if Xavier doesn't give us any minutes. Speaking of, coming up next, Austin Rivers, a supremely below average player according to the NBA rank at
3.45 composite average out of 10. 3.45.
Yeah, but I don't even know what that means, because I really have no clue. But I mean, at 285, you figure about 30 guys on this list aren't even in the NBA. So they're figuring he's going to be, definitely a below average player. That puts
him between 9th and 10th man on a roster.
Yeah. Anyway, I really don't know what to say. He was on ESPN First Take this week. He's really great on camera, really great on interviews. I don't know. I just keep going back to, if we could somehow erase the first half of his season at Duke, his numbers would be very impressive. I think if people just looked at that, they would be much more optimistic. But then again, you could say, well, he got off to a slow start. The NBA is even a harder transition. So you could be looking at a season or two similar to what he went through the first half of season at Duke before he figures it out like he did at Duke and, makes a step in the league if he ever does.
Yeah, and wiping out half a season is never that great idea. If you took Al Farouk's rookie season and took off the second half of it, the man would look like he was primed to be a superstar.
But see, that's not fair. There's two different halves. So, like, if a guy was great in the first half and horrible in the second half, I think that's massively different than bad in the first half and great in the second. I mean, you see that he's starting to figure things out, and I guess we see some guys come into different leagues and make such seamless, great transitions that we think it's easy. It's really, I mean, it's a difficult thing to do, and I guess I'm just more encouraged by the second half of a season. But I do think that, just like we saw at Duke, it's going to take him a while to become acclimated to the game. But I still think having Anthony Davis on the team will make the transition very easy for him.
So here's my hard question for you about Austin Rivers. This season, is he going to play more point guard or shooting guard?
I guess to answer that question, I got to think more of who is he going to be playing with, because I don't know if it's going to be technically a specific position. I think he's going to be on the court a lot with Eric Gordon. And if that's the case, I guess you could call him a point guard, but I think.
So let me change it, so I'm not doing the whole position thing, because I agree with you, the whole guard thing is kind of stupid. So does he play more on the ball, with the ball in his hands making things happen, or is he more off the ball?
I think more on the ball. I think that's his biggest weakness, is off the ball. I know people say seeing the court and, making passes, but my biggest thing with him is off the ball. He's just not a very good shooter, and I've seen this a lot. I actually used to do it. When you have the ball in your hand a lot, you get into a much different shooting rhythm. I mean, you're used to pounding the ball, coming off using a pick, shooting. I mean, we see all the same highlights from him. It's isolation with the ball. He's actually a very poor spot up shooter, because you could just tell it's not something that he does very often. He he gets his rhythm of his shot by pounding the ball. And that's just something that he's going to have to change. If he's playing off the ball, he's going to be very ineffective. I think when he's on the court on offense, he has the ball in his hand a large portion of the time.
Okay. I have honestly no idea what Austin Rivers is going to do for this team. I have absolutely no faith that it's going to be good. but, you know, I would love for him to actually be able to have the ball in his hands to be able to create for us and draw fouls.
So I wrote an article a couple of weeks ago about the Hornets play ifs, I called it, where if this happens, if that happens, the Hornets could be a playoff team. It's a stretch, but every team has their ifs. My if for Austin Rivers was if he could be 2007, 2008 Gennaro Pargo. And I think a lot of people remember Pargo that year differently than reality. I mean, he was a 38, 39% shooter who, yeah, he'd have his 18-point games, but far more often he would have his 2 to 3 point games. He was just crazy energy, and when he got hot, he changed the game. He was always moving fast pace. He could come in and start. I think Chris Paul missed 2 or 3 games that year. He came in and he spot started in those games. I think they went 2-1. Do you think Austin Rivers could be the equivalent to 2007, 2008 Gennaro Pargo?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think he could do that. I don't know if he has the explosive speed Pargo had, but then Pargo used his explosive speed to get 20 feet from the basket and then jack up a long two. So I think Austin Rivers is smart enough that he could probably get that shot if he wanted it, whenever he wanted it. I don't know. I agree with you that the perception of Pargo is crazy compared to what the reality of Pargo always was. Because you got to remember that year, I remember the horrid frustration I had because they had brought in Bobby Jackson for a reasonably sized contract. Like, I think he was a mid-range player too. Mm-hmm. And he and Pargo were competing to see who could have the lowest field goal percentage. I think at one point both of them were at 35%, and I was about ready to beat my head on a wall.
Yeah.
So, and when Bobby was sent packing for Bonzi, and you know, Bonzi Wells, who was out of the league a year later because he's a malcontent crazy person, and I was excited by that. Yeah. So, I mean, absolutely, Austin Rivers could be Gennaro Pargo. I don't know. The one place I don't know what's going to happen is Pargo was waterbug quick and could actually defend quick point guards pretty well, and that was a lot of what Byron Scott used him for. I don't know if Austin has that speed.
Yeah, and again, I mean, this is another reason I think he's on the floor more with Eric Gordon than he is with Xavier Henry or Grievous Vasquez. So whether you want to call that point guard, shooting guard, whatever, I think those two guys, I think when Rivers is in the game, I would guess, I don't know, 70% of the time he's in the game, he's on the floor with Gordon, if not more.
So here's one more question for Austin Rivers. I was one of the 104 odd people who voted for these rankings. And I don't think Austin Rivers is poorly placed in this list. Where would you have had him, though? I mean, you can't have him in the top 100, right?
No, I when I did my predictions, I did it based on the year before. Uh-huh. I think the year before, Bellinelli was like 224.
Okay.
So I thought he would be in that 215 to 230 range. I think it's reasonable to expect going into this year that Austin Rivers will be as good as we thought Bellinelli would be going into last year. There's just so many things to me. I keep pounding it. And now that I'm watching football, it's another stat. Like, I think wide receivers should keep track of when a defense gets called for pass interference on a receiver. That's a huge advantage for the team. It's not kept track on, you know, with those receiver stats, but they're getting their team 30, 40 yards on a long pass interference. To me, I think Austin Rivers is going to do a lot of that. I think he's going to have similar stats as Gennaro Pargo in that year, which, again, if you look back on, they're kind of ugly, but he provided a lot of spark. And I think on top of that, Rivers will draw a lot of fouls, get the Hornets into penalties more. And I don't know how you NBA rank that. I just know that to me, I'd rather have that than, you know, a backup guard who just, you know, sits outside and chucks and doesn't cause any headaches for the defense or is not a guy you have to game plan. I think even if it's only 3 or 4 minutes in a meeting, I think teams will have to game plan for Austin Rivers because he has that potential, you know, to go off on any given night.
Okay. So let's go to who I feel was the second most overrated player for the Hornets in NBA rank. Hakeem Warrick came in at 272 overall. He did drop 42 slots from his previous year's ranking. So Hakeem Warrick, you think he's overrated or underrated? Or just right?
No, I think overrated. So again, 272, that means he's a good ninth man.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, he's a solid ninth man. No, I don't think so. I can't think of many teams. I mean, even Charlotte, like, I don't think he would get playing time on Charlotte. I'm trying to think of a bad team that he could do something for, and I just can't see it. I think he's a guy, had a couple decent seasons in the league. I think maybe in a right system, he could provide some, I don't even know. I'm reaching here. I don't even think he's a player. Like, I think him and Lance Thomas are going to be fighting for minutes, those 5 minutes you talked about.
Right. So let me throw you the stats of Hakeem Warrick at everybody, because I know most people haven't seen him play much, probably since he was in Syracuse. So Hakeem Warrick played for Memphis. He's played now for the Suns for some time. At one point in his career, it was about 2 years ago, he had extremely good numbers finishing pick and rolls. That even if he didn't get the dunk, he had a nice 10-foot range shot. So his true shooting percentages were always pretty nice. So his overall ratings, like PER, end up looking pretty decent for those years because he had a nice true shooting percentage. And it made up for the fact that he never passed. He never rebounded. He was a terrible rebounder. He never blocked shots. He never got steals. All those things were kind of hidden by his true shooting percentage. But then if you can look at any statistic that measures defensive ability, Hakeem Warrick always ranks in like the bottom 10 in the entire league. You look at Synergy site, they rank him horribly over like defending every type of play. And if you look at any other thing, his numbers are terrible in every single year. He's never even reached average. And then here's the thing. So, okay, maybe you can see him coming in for a few minutes as an offensive player to roll to the basket off of a pick and roll. The last 2 years, his numbers have been awful on the pick and roll as well, which is why he hasn't played for the Suns. So I fully expect Hakeem Warrick to not budge from the bench. And for him, the Hornets just to have him as a practice player. I don't expect him to go anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, ever since the deal was done, I've seen him as trade bait. He's an expiring salary. If Dell wants to make a move, which, you know, that's like saying if it wants to rain in Seattle.
Right.
So that's going to be one of his expiring contracts, along with somebody like Xavier Henry.
The expiring contract of Xavier Henry.
Yeah, I mean, there you're up to $7 million, and then maybe you throw in something decent, and you get back a solid player. So,
right.
But that's all I expect of Hakeem Warrick. I think maybe if this was a running team, you know, if you could put Hakeem Warrick in for a couple of minutes a game at next to Anthony Davis, and they could run to the rim together, but that's just not going to happen. So, again, another guy that I think it's a little bit of a waste talking about. To me, he's an expiring contract on this team that, you know, hopefully encourages Anthony Davis to continue bulking up once he sees what happens to real thin guys in the league.
Okay.
So I want to go to our travesty.
Yeah, the worst injustice in the entire NBA, right?
So I didn't look at yours, but I had Jason Smith easily. I didn't even have to think about it for a second as the fourth best Hornet. How about you?
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah, it's him and Vasquez are the only two other reasonably decent players on this team.
So
I guess you can say Robin maybe.
So he's ranked 261, seventh on the Hornets team. But let me get, I mean, there's tons of guys, but I just wanted to pick a few that he's behind. Austin Day, who has gotten little to no playing time in Detroit when they're trying to tear to him. And yeah, he's awful. I mean, this has to be based on a couple summer league games or something, because in NBA games that actually count, he's awful. Josh Childress is ahead of him.
Who is waived?
Wait for it. Rashard Lewis. Yes, that Rashard Lewis that the Hornets paid $14 million to not show up, that nobody had interest in other than the Miami Heat for a minimum contract. That Rashard Lewis is supposedly ahead of Jason Smith. Brendan Haywood, an amnesty candidate who a claim got put in by the worst team of all time, Charlotte. And then Marco Bellinelli, a guy that no Hornet fan, no matter how delusional or Italian they may be, would take over Jason Smith. All way, and in some cases, far ahead of Jason Smith, not to mention our own Al-Farouq Aminu. But yeah, 261, I can't wrap my head around this ranking, you know, especially what we've seen from him the last year and a half.
Yeah, I mean, Jason, we've said this before, Jason Smith was the most improved player on the Hornets last year, and that's probably why no one knows anything about him, because, I mean, he was on the horrible Hornets. No one watched the horrible Hornets, and his best year came on the horrible Hornets. But you know what? I mean, he's absolutely the fourth best player on the team, and he probably should have been about 100 points higher. I would not say he's a starter, but he is an elite third big man.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, the fact that Al-Farouq Aminu is ahead of him is solely due to the fact that Al-Farouq Aminu was a top 10 pick. I mean, if Al-Farouq Aminu had put up the same exact stats and was an undrafted rookie free agent, where would he be on this list? He wouldn't be anywhere near where it's purely, you know, based on reputation via the draft. But the fact that Aminu's ahead of Smith is just laughable. But the fact that, yeah, about 50 to 70 guys ahead of Smith, they're not even debatable. I mean, Smith should definitely be in the top 200. But, yeah, that was odd to me. And, again, he's just known as the Blake Griffin guy now, so.
So here's my whole take, and let's see how if you agree with me on this. Looking at NBA rank, and I'm going to jump up. So Al-Farouq Aminu is only three spots higher than Smith. Vasquez is at 220 or 224. Robin Lopez is at 169. Would you or would you not switch Smith and Lopez where they are in this rank?
Oh, easily.
I mean, do you have any problem putting Lopez that low?
No, and to me, if his name was Robin Lopez, if he was not related to Brook Lopez, there wouldn't be any of this hype. I mean, and not that Brook Lopez is great, but the fact that he has a twin brother, because of that, he was kind of a name, and he's been watched out of school. I mean, I just really believe so much, whether it's Hornets fans' excitement, whether it's this NBA rank, whatever, I think so much of it comes from the fact that there's twin centers in the NBA, and obviously they got national exposure in their run at Stanford and when they got drafted, and they both sound like Andre the Giant and the Princess Bride when they talk.
Right. So
I really think that's such a big part of it. If he was not related to Brook Lopez, if he had the same exact career so far, was drafted in the same place and his name was Robin Smith and he wasn't related to anybody, I think he would be where Smith is, and, you know, Smith should definitely be higher.
Yeah, I mean, Lopez is a backup center who is really good in certain situations. And he'll in the Western Conference, he will have more of those situations available to him than if he was in the Eastern Conference. So he's definitely valuable to the Hornets. But 169th, I have a hard time seeing him as a starter, and that's basically saying he's right there in the starter range.
He's a starter, fringe starter, yeah. And see, this is my thing. So NBA rank is supposed to – you're supposed to be predicting how you think this player is going to be this upcoming year.
Right.
You're not – it's not on past accolades. Otherwise, Duncan would be, you know, number one or two on this list, not 20 – whatever he was, 24, 25. So Robin Lopez, what leads you to believe that he's going to be that good when – the last 2 years he has declined. I don't understand the rationale. If it was just, if we took all emotions, names, everything out of it, I showed you a player who has declined each of the last 2 years, and then I showed you another player who has greatly improved each of the last 2 years, you would definitely put the Jason Smith player over the Robin Lopez. It's just a name thing at this point.
Yeah, the only other thing you have is maybe people feel that the opportunity he's going to get as the quote-unquote starting center of the New Orleans Hornets will, you know, keep him higher than you'd expect.
Yeah.
But, I mean, of course, part of that is people still haven't really figured out what the rotation is going to be with the Hornets. I mean, we haven't even figured it out, really. I mean, we have our ideas of what it's going to be, and we're both pretty certain Anderson and Davis are going to be getting most of the minutes there. But, you know, a lot of people don't see it that way because, of course, they don't appreciate Ryan Anderson either. But before we jump up to Ryan Anderson and the big three who come right after Lopez, we skipped over Aminu, 258, low, high, just right.
So is he an average player in the league? So eighth, ninth, yeah, that's about right. I think what's interesting overall, I mean – okay, so I guess my question back to you for Aminu, and I know these lists are kind of ridiculous, but in reality, what kind of jump will he have to make next year? Where will he have to be on this list? If this was a true list, not if this was just, you know, a bunch of people who don't watch the Hornets and then, you know, a couple who do. I mean, where does Al-Farouq Aminu have to be? We've already seen him drop 20 spots on this list from the prior year. Where does he need to be for the Hornets to have any kind of feeling that he is going to be some kind of answer as a starting small forward?
Like where in the rank?
Yeah, in reality, in the rank, however you want to put it, where does he have to be next year as far as how big of a leap does he have to make in order to, you know, really have the Hornets thinking that this guy is their starting small forward of the present and the future?
Well, I think he has to jump at least into the above 200. I mean, he's got to prove that he's a sixth or seventh man on this team, like right now, sixth or seventh ability right now. I don't think he has to like prove that he's a starter this year because they are rebuilding. But I think he has to show that he's improving, that he's getting better, that, you know, he's not blowing so many layups and that his defense is getting locked in. And if you can show that, I think he'll probably, you know, jump. So here's the problem with saying NBA rank, because, of course, you know, same number of people are going to watch the Hornets that watched last year in a lot of situations, unless Davis and Gordon blow up for us. I mean, his only way of improving is to be seen, but I think that he would probably have to improve 20% for the Hornets to even consider keeping him as a long-term plan.
Does it have to be across the board, or do you think that Monty and Dell would be satisfied if he just purely became a specialist? You ran a lot of those numbers where the Hornets were a much better rebounding team when he was on the floor. If he could give them an elite rebounder at the small forward position, along with like a top seven, top eight defender at that position in the league, basically he's Kawhi Leonard, but without the scoring, with more rebounding. Would that be enough, or are the Hornets eventually going to need somebody who could do multiple things and be a threat at this position?
You don't have to, no. I mean, you don't have to have a threat at every position. I mean, he has to be able to do one thing offensively. You have to be able to do one thing to be a legitimate chance to hit 30 minutes a game. But if you're just really, really great at a few things and maybe you don't have any offensive skill, you're still going to be able to carve out roles where you get 15 to 20 minutes a game. And honestly, I don't think Aminu is going to be better than that in his career.
So gut feeling, not next year, but the year after, is Al-Farouq Aminu a Hornet?
Yes, as long as there isn't an incredibly nice trade that they demand him in that trade.
Hmm.
I feel that Aminu is good enough that you would keep him through the length of his rookie contract, which isn't odious.
Okay. Yeah.
Disagree with that?
Yeah, I think I think they basically have to decide in the next 2 months whether or not they're going to pick up next season's salary, so I think they will. But that year after that, which is why I asked that year specifically, his qualifying offer is at $5
million.
Mm-hmm. I just, for him to be a $5 million player.
Well, that assumes that Dell doesn't do something like Oklahoma City does, which is, yeah, I'm not going to pay you $5 million, but would you like a long-term 3-year contract for $8
million? Yeah, I don't know. I'm hoping for James McAdoo in the draft, and then we could just move on from Aminu, but let's get way ahead of ourselves.
James, what, do you think we're going to be top three again? Well, we'll get it. Yeah, you're saying we're getting ahead of ourselves there.
I think we could win. I think the lotto balls come up our way. Thanks to the commish. But, okay, so Al-Farouq Aminu was a bottom three starting small forward in the league according to NBA rank. Even worse than that was a guy who was ahead of him that moved up almost 50 spots. Grievous Vasquez comes in at 224, which according to NBA rank would make him the worst starting point guard in the NBA. I guess I'll just leave it right there. And what are your thoughts on either his rank, or is he the worst starting point guard in the NBA, or any or all of the above?
I think he may be a little low in the NBA rank, but I'm not saying like 40 spots low. I mean, I think about 200 is where he should be. I mean, Grievous Vasquez, I don't think is a starting point guard in the NBA. And it's not shocking that the NBA rank says that he is the worst starting point guard in the NBA. There are some point guards who will start this year who I would take Grievous Vasquez over. But there aren't a lot.
Yeah.
So do you have, I mean, I know you've taken a look around the league at point guards. Anybody, it blows your mind that Grievous Vasquez is ranked worse than them?
Well, there's a couple of teams with multiple point guards ranked higher than Grievous Vasquez. So I'll give you two teams. One is the New York Knicks. They have Iman Shumpert, Jason Kidd, and Raymond Felton all above Grievous Vasquez. Would you take all three of the, if the Hornets could have any of those guys, would you take them as a starter over Grievous Vasquez?
So I'll be honest about Iman Shumpert. I have never seen the man play because the only Knicks games I ever caught last year, he was injured already. And I understand he's a nice defender, but his numbers aren't impressive. So I don't know about Iman Shumpert. But I would never in my life take Jason Kidd or Raymond Felton over Grievous Vasquez. Felton, just anyone, if you're rolling your eyes at me and you have access to a computer right now, Google Raymond Felton in a Portland Trail Blazers outfit. he looks like the Pillsbury Doughboy. He is so fat. I mean, Eddie Curry, you know, is nothing compared to what Raymond Felton looked like last year. And people in Portland hated Felton. If you go to the Blazers' Edge, you'll find entire threads where it's just, you know, pure vitriol aimed at Raymond Felton. And Jason Kidd, people may not have noticed last year, but he fell off a cliff. He was already declining, but he's such a smart player, he can usually get around it. Last year, his shooting percentage has plummeted way beyond even his normal. He is 40 years old. There's no way I would want him on this team going forward. Grievous Vasquez all the way.
Yeah. I mean, I found that interesting. Another team was a team that was right there with the Hornets for worst record in the West. Sacramento Kings had 3 point guards that were ranked higher than Grievous Vasquez. Isaiah Thomas, who I knew, you know, I know that's it was a nice story last year, last pick in the draft. Guy came up, had some good numbers. We'll see when he does it for a second year or in a game that ever matters. And then Tyreek Evans, which obviously, and then also Aaron Brooks, who took a year off. We don't know what to expect, but there wasn't much interest around the league when he came back. So
yeah, he got no interest. It was amazing how little interest he got.
Yeah. So I mean, and this goes on. I mean, there I found 8 or 9 backup point guards ahead of Grievous. So according to NBA rank, he's right around that number 40 range as far as where they see him in relation to other point guards in the league. I definitely think he has a lot to work on, but I'm interested in him seeing him take over the reins and maybe not having to do so much this year, especially offensively. I think with more weapons around, we might see a more under control Grievous Vasquez.
Yeah, I will say there's 2 things, and the stats bear this out. 2 things that always bothered me the most about Vasquez last year. Defensively, he was fine. Stats point to him as a pretty fine player. But offensively, when he was trying to create, sometimes it would take him 4 or 5 picks that had to be set just right before he could get one that gave him enough room that he could actually start making a way to the basket, which made the Hornets waste like 14 seconds before they were actually in a set in their pick and roll offense. Which that was pretty bad. And when a team threw a really determined defender, really good on the ball defender at Vasquez, he was not good at handling that pressure. I mean, he had to turn his back, you know, wall the guy off with his outstretched left hand while he's dribbling. And he really couldn't handle that kind of pressure very well. So you're absolutely right. If we can get him in a situation where he's doing like a secondary breakdown, or if his first or second attempts to get into a pick and roll fail, he can dump it to Gordon and let Gordon make a move, or even just having Anthony Davis as a really legitimate lob roll man might help him there too. But I mean, if he improves either of those 2 things, I'm fine with him being the starting point guard this year for the Hornets.
Yeah. I think with guys who could create on the ball in Rivers and Gordon, he could be that secondary guy that you talk about. And the other thing I'm honestly worried with him a little bit is I felt like he played his best last season when him and Gustavo were on the court together. And I'm curious to see who he develops that chemistry with, if anybody. Yeah, that's what's going to be interesting to me, because it seemed like he just had a little more flair when he was out there with Gustavo, and they really worked well together. So hopefully he could develop that chemistry with somebody else, Anthony Davis, whoever. But that would be my other concern going into this year.
So I do want to say one thing here, because, I mean, I love me with Gustavo. So, and I know that this wasn't an opportunity, so don't anyone start thinking that, you know, Gustavo could have stayed and this has gone differently. But if you had the option between Gustavo Ayon and Robin Lopez on this team next year, who are you taking?
I would take Gustavo, and I'm also curious. I mean, I'm even more brave than that. I uh, If Orlando came to me with the same sign and trade and asked for Al-Farouq Aminu, I would have given them him.
Right.
I'm really curious how much Orlando wanted Gustavo specifically, how much they wanted just a young guy on a low salary, because I would have offered up Al-Farouq before him. I would have even offered up Grievous, and I know I would have been stuck at point guard. Maybe I would have had to go get a stopgap like a Ramon Sessions this offseason or whatever. But I would have really liked, you got to give to get, and Ryan Anderson, we'll get into later how much, if people don't already know how much we love him, but it would have been really nice to have kept Gustavo.
Right. So three guys left that were got ranked. Oh, we forgot to mention there were two guys who didn't get ranked at all. Brian Roberts, who that's not surprising considering he came from Europe, Germany. And then this one was a little surprise for me because he actually played last year a significant amount of time. Somehow Roger Mason got left off the list, which is really bad for me because I had Roger Mason in my estimated minutes playing 1,400 minutes for the Hornets this coming season.
Yeah.
So if he's that bad, we're in some real trouble.
No, it was just a mistake. I think Mason definitely goes ahead of Xavier Henry, and I'd probably even put him ahead of Hakeem Warrick somewhere in that late 260s, early 270s range.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to the three big guys then. The ranking for Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, Anthony Davis. Gordon came in tops with a 38. Ryan Anderson came in at 50. And Anthony Davis came in at 62. So do you have any quibbles with any of these? I know you want Anthony Davis to be number one.
All right, well, here, let's take a look. So Anthony Davis is 62. You can't really, I guess it's better to err on the side of caution. If you're making your rankings, you know what you have in one hand with certain guys. And Anthony Davis still hasn't played a minute in the league. So, he was given a lot of respect. He was 62. Last year's number one overall pick going into NBA rank last year, Kyrie Irving was 140.
Yeah.
So, MKG is the next highest rookie at 128. So, Anthony Davis is obviously seen by the panel as, somebody who could be a transcendent player. That being said, I would be shocked if some of the guys ahead of him outperformed him, guys like David West. If David West outperforms Anthony Davis this year, I'll be absolutely floored.
Poor David West. He's a veteran. He's a leader.
Andrea Bargnani. I don't think any team in this league, I'm not even talking about the future, I'm talking about this year, would take Andrea Bargnani over Anthony Davis.
There is not a more empty 20 points per game than Andrea Bargnani out there.
There's a lot, but okay, so let me go into the two guys that I think, Davis, at least early in his career, again, I project him as a David Robinson / Hakeem Olajuwon when he gets into his prime. But early in his career, Joakim Noah and Tyson Chandler. So Noah's ranked 36. Tyson Chandler's up at 23 this year.
Okay, which is a little high for me, though I love Tyson Chandler.
Now, what percentage chance would you give me, would you give that Anthony Davis is better than either of those guys this upcoming year? I mean, do you think
this upcoming year?
Yes, because this NBA rank is supposed to project this upcoming year. So do you think it's a possibility that he's better than either of those guys, even if those guys stay healthy this upcoming year?
60% chance that he's better
than both, or one guy specifically, or
I would say a 50% chance he's better than both, and a 75% chance he's better than one.
I'm asking, is there either one of those guys that you think he's more likely to be better than, or
so I actually feel that he'll be better than Tyson Chandler.
Yeah, I mean, so what's the difference between the two of them and their games right now? On the
between him and Tyson?
On the defensive end, yeah.
Defensive experience.
So just, I know he talked a lot about learning how to, you know, when to not jump on pump fakes and...
Right. So I think Anthony Davis clearly has more offensive potential than Tyson, which gives him a little bit of a boost there. I think, but Tyson has all the experience. He knows how to defend a lot of different guys in the league, and that does matter a lot. Anthony Davis hasn't seen any of these guys on the court, really. I mean, unless it's DeMarcus Cousins, there isn't a guy he's going to be playing against that he's had any significant experience. So he's got to learn all of that, and he's going to take his lumps. And he's extremely clever, and he's cat quick, and he's got unbelievable anticipation. So he's going to look good doing it, but he's still got to learn that stuff to become really effective. So, but I mean,
how about offensively? Yeah. Do you see him as being better than either or both of those guys offensively this year?
I think he's probably already better than Tyson Chandler. So Noah is a very, very good passer. That's actually something I've always really liked to watch. Noah, if when he gets the ball in the high post, you can actually run the ball through him a little bit. I don't know if Anthony Davis has that kind of feel for the game offensively in his rookie year. So we'll see.
I mean, that was something that we commented about a lot on the Mike Schmidt's videos going into the draft is, like I said, when I was watching the MKG videos, there was a lot of high post to low post passes from Anthony Davis, and I don't know. I think he is going to be better than many expect offensively from the start. I just hope he doesn't. You know, I saw even at this UK alumni game, he was shooting a lot of threes and kind of looking over at Calipari. I hope he was just doing that as a kind of, see, you should have let me shoot more. I think Monty reins that in, but... I really think his big advantage in the league is going to be taking guys off the dribble, and then obviously his explosion on alley-oops and hard pass to the basket.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, I think he could be better than both of them offensively. I think he could be. I'm just not willing to say he's better than Noah, because Noah's fairly versatile, even if he can't hit a jumper. So,
all right, and then last I have for Anthony Davis, we have two future Hall of Famers way above him on the list this year, and Duncan and KG. Eventually, the tires have to fall off these guys. Any chance that he's better than either one or both of those guys this year?
No.
Okay.
I really don't. I don't think they will this year. I wouldn't be shocked at all if next year he absolutely was.
Yeah, I mean, by Blake Griffin's second year, he was number 10 on this list.
Right.
So... I think that Anthony Davis is a better prospect, though a little younger. So we'll see. Your prediction right now, Anthony Davis is what number on NBA rank next summer?
It all depends on how far the Hornets go.
The Clippers didn't go anywhere, and Blake shot up to number 10.
Yeah, but Blake is a highlight reel, and I don't think Anthony Davis will be quite the highlight reel Blake is. Because
so,
I don't think Davis has the ferocity that Blake throws his dunks down with. I would say Anthony Davis will be 14.
Okay. Well, it's pretty high. Yeah. All right. I guess I'll go with.
And I'll say this: if the Hornets are fighting for playoff position all the way through March, he will be in probably about 10 where Blake Griffin is, maybe even higher, depending on how much of that is his.
And does Anthony Davis, if they're going to do this every year, I know we're going to hold on to this podcast and I'm going to track you down. Does he ever get up to number one on this list in his career?
I don't know. That's a hard one. I really don't know.
All right, so let's move on.
I mean, LeBron James will have to stop winning championships, and Durant will have to not be winning championships. But it's really hard to picture what's going to happen. I mean, Kyrie Irving could turn into something amazing, too. I mean, how do you... So, right. Anyways. So let me put it this way. The very fact that I hesitated means that there's a chance. which is
I think it's a good chance. I think if he's what I think he is, it's going to be either him or Durant 4 or 5 years from now, and then battling each other for the next 5 years after that. And to me, you would almost always take the big man over the scorer. So I would put the odds at pretty high, like 30% to 40%.
Okay.
Okay, Ryan Anderson. So number 50, I thought it was a really cool tweet he tweeted out. When he found out he was ranked 50th on this list, he was like, he said, you know, for a guy that wasn't even a top 100 high school recruit to be number 50 on the NBA rank is just kind of surreal. And he seemed happy about it. He was happy. I wasn't. I think that he was ranked low. I personally believe he was a top 30 player in the NBA last year. If you look at everything, throw out people's names, just look at last year in a vacuum. He was a top 30 player in the NBA, and he's improved every year in the league. There's no reason not to expect that he won't again while other guys continue to decline. I think 50 is too low. How do you feel?
I agree. I think he was a borderline all-star last year, so which puts him right around the 20 to 30 range, which is kind of where you're saying. I think that people just – the Dwight Howard thing. Every time they look at Ryan Anderson, it's always, yeah, but he had Dwight Howard. Yeah, but he had Dwight Howard. But you know what? Dwight Howard had Ryan Anderson too.
Yeah.
And having that spacing helps Dwight Howard just as much as having Dwight Howard down low helps Ryan Anderson. And – if you actually look at the numbers, this NBA stats tool, which is so wonderful, Ryan Anderson did not shoot quite as well when Dwight was not playing with him, but he scored more and he rebounded a lot more.
Right.
So, I mean, he was a 21-10 guy with Dwight Howard not playing next to him per 36 minutes.
Right, and you can't have it both ways. So, like, Chris Bosh gets a pass for having less stats because he plays with better players.
Right.
But now you're penalizing Ryan Anderson for playing next to Dwight. You can't – and people always do this. If you want to point out a player's flaws, there's always some way of skewing this or looking at that. Or in these three games at 4 p.m., you know, he didn't do this and therefore whatever. I feel like people want to have it both ways. You can't both – say that a guy gets a pass because he's playing with better players, so if his stats go down, it's okay. And then also say, oh, his stats were good because he played with a great player. It doesn't make sense. He's a very good player, borderline great player, who does two things at an elite level in the NBA and still has room to grow in his game. There's nothing that has shown that he's going to, you know, stay stagnant or decrease his production. So I just think if he was a top 30 player last year, you know, he should have been there this year. And Tim Duncan's a legend. I think somebody like Ryan Anderson is a better player right now. I guess I think Ryan Anderson's going to have a better season this season than Tim Duncan.
Hmm.
So I'd put him in that area.
Okay.
So
there, I do want to point this out really quick about Ryan Anderson, because I love Ryan Anderson clearly, and Michael loves Ryan Anderson clearly. There was an article recently on ESPN of Dark Horse MVP candidates, which had Andrew Bynum in it. Ryan Anderson was one of them. Do you think he's that good?
I mean, the Shoney, or I still haven't got that name. I mean,
Shaney.
If his NBA comparison is Dirk Nowitzki, I mean, why is it impossible? Why is it impossible that he becomes at least closer to Dirk?
It could happen. I just don't. I mean, MVP, I can't. Unless the Hornets enter the playoffs, there's no way that's happening.
Yeah, MVP is a stretch. But Hornets MVP is, I actually think he would be the favorite for Hornets MVP. But my favorite thing about this NBA rank were, you know, looking at the guys ahead of Ryan Anderson, and there's some Schwann favorites there, from Amare to Monte Ellis to Rudy Gay. Which one of those guys irks you the most ahead of Ryan Anderson?
So right now, probably Amare, which is stupid that he's fallen apart that badly, because Amare used to be a decent player. But Yeah, any of those three players. Who irks me the most? So you're basically Monte Ellis. Wow. So yeah, Amari's the worst one. I have a hard time picking between Ellis and Rudy Gay.
Why is it so hard for
Monte Ellis, probably.
Why is it so hard for us as humans to realize that a person who they were in the past, that has nothing to do with the player they are now? I mean, Amari Stoudemire is a completely different player, and we're not insulting who he used to be to say that, you know, he's far less of a player today than Ryan Anderson. I mean, eventually, these players just, you know, aren't good at. Where would Michael Jordan be on NBA rank today? 100 and something? Is that disrespecting his career? You know what I mean? I mean, at some point, you're just not the player you used to be. It's no disrespect to who you were. But the fact that we still prop these guys up because of what they did years ago just doesn't make sense. And, yeah, the fact that Amari's ahead of Ryan Anderson is just pretty laughable.
By the way, I gave Anthony Davis an 8 out of 10. Do you think I gave him too low?
What does that mean?
So that's what they left. They left us the leeway to pick whatever we wanted.
What does 8 mean versus 9?
So for me, 10 was a top 10 superstar, 9 was a legitimate star, 8 was a guy who has potential to be a star, but definitely a really good starter no matter what. And then 7 was just an average starter, and then 5 and 6 were a six-man kind of guy, and everything below 5 I just kind of graded out however I felt.
See, like, to me, you're using such broad words. Like, what does a star mean? So to me, mine would be... 10 would be a guy who is still going to get his even when the entire game plan is focused on him.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan, LeBron, I mean, you're not going to see Durant have a four-point night. 9, you know, would be a guy who is the game plan for, you know, a certain team but cannot – carry his team all the way, but he's a guy that you have to focus on, but he can't be the number one guy. Like, I would think like a Pau Gasol in his prime. So yeah, Anthony Davis would have been somewhere between an 8 and a 9 for me, probably an 8 this year, but I would expect him to be a 9 fairly soon.
Yeah, I thought these numbers, the scores were really weird, because I gave Anthony Davis an 8. And obviously I'm going to be higher than a lot of people, but how does he end up with a 6.3? Out of a scale of 10, 5 should be average, so he's barely above average. The score was weird.
Yeah, see, but you're giving – so what's unfair about yours is you're giving the top 10 players a 10. That means you're giving LeBron the same as, I don't know, who's your ninth best player?
Dirk Nowitzki probably, somewhere around there.
That's not fair.
I guess.
Like, I think most people probably only gave 1 to 3 guys a 10.
Yeah.
And then from there, maybe you give the next tier. So, yeah, I would think most people gave Anthony Davis a 7, yeah, 6 based on that. But, yeah, to me, LeBron and Durant are the only two 10s right now. And then I'd probably have a group of 9s. But, I mean, even then, Chris Paul would be a 9. I can't even put Dirk in the same group as Chris Paul. So, anyway.
I think that's how most people felt was there. Like, there were other people talking about it, and they're like, all of their players were like 5 and 10. They were like having starters like Andre Iguodala were falling into like 6s and 5s. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
And basically everybody else, like the scrubs, got like 1s. So... All right, let's move on to the final player,
so
Eric Gordon.
Eric Gordon plays 9 games, and he moves up a spot to number 38. I mean, it makes me wonder where he could have fell on this list if he played as well as he played in those 9 games over, say, 75 or 80 games.
Yeah. I mean, Eric Gordon, I think most people, the consensus I get is most people feel that if he was healthy, he would be, you know, a top 10 or 15 talent.
I mean,
which
compared to, so James Harden on this list is 26.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Gordon.
I think that they're equivalents.
So
I really do.
A healthy season, he could have been right around that range.
Yeah. So here, I got to say this because it vanished. The best tweet I saw on NBA Rank was his. That has been changed now, but somebody had had tweeted about him. Is this his NBA Rank or the over under for the number of games played this year?
Yeah.
38. Yeah. So that's the whole thing with Eric Gordon. I mean, so, okay, Eric Gordon, I tell you right now, he plays 82 games a season. No, let me change that. He plays 76 games this season. He has a little bit of a sprained ankle issue at one point. Where do you think he's going to fall if he has a fully healthy season?
See, to me, if he gives me a fully healthy season this year, I think he's better than I think he'd be higher on the list next year than Manu Ginobili, who came in at 25. So I think he's right around there. I think he's right in that, you know, right in that range, right in that 22 to 30 range. So
what you're telling me is that if Eric Gordon is healthy and Anthony Davis performs as expected, next year we could have three players in the 10 to 30 range.
Yeah.
So then here's the next question. Does it matter that the next best guy is ranked 169 if you have three top 30 players on your team?
Again, I think it's about fit, and how these guys fit together. And that's what I'm really curious to see. I mean, still amongst those three guys, you do not have a low post score. You don't have really somebody who, I mean, there's a couple things you don't have in there. You don't have a second creator when the defense just hassles, when the defense hassles Eric Gordon. So, I mean, the Heat have multiple guys in that top 30, but they have multiple creators. They also have a low post guy. You know, Oklahoma City has multiple creators. So to me, it's more about how those three guys are going to fit. And I still think even if they fit well, you're going to need another creator. This is why I was talking about getting a Brandon Jennings or something like that, another guy, you know, who has to be the focus of the defense. So hopefully that's where Austin Rivers comes in. But yeah, I still think you would need another piece, even if you had three of the top 30 players in the league going into next year.
All right. So that's NBA Rank. I spent a lot of time on it.
Yeah.
It's fun to talk about this kind of stuff. I love ranks. Yeah. I love lists.
Well, I mean, the last thing I had on Eric Gordon that I thought was pretty interesting was that he was only one spot ahead of Danny Granger, a guy who, when, you know, there was talk, Hornets fans of you know, trading Eric Gordon for Granger, whatever, and people kind of, you know, would throw up at the thought of that. There's only one spot ahead of him. I mean, it's, I don't know, I just found that interesting, and again, it's a health issue thing, but if people in the league kind of see these guys as equivalents, as players, you know, then would you take Danny Granger, I guess, would be the question, because at least one guy has a track record of being healthy. So
at this point, would I take Danny Granger over Eric Gordon? I probably would.
Yeah, but I mean,
because of the health thing. I mean, but then you're going to tear it yourself, because Eric Gordon's age 23 and Granger's what? Is he 28 now?
Yeah, somewhere in there. But yeah, I mean, it's, I don't think there's any right or wrong answer, but ask Hornets fans and they throw up at the thought and counter with, you know, Paul George and some other quality, in exchange.
Darren Collison.
Yeah. Can't do that fake trade anymore, but,
right.
So yeah, that's NBA Rank. Lastly, we'll move on. We're going to, you know, we got the Western Conference, obviously, that the Hornets are a part of. So as the season's getting closer, like you said, we're only a couple weeks away from training camp. Look at the other teams we'll be competing with playoff spots with. We'll do this in reverse order and go through two a week. So We'll go in reverse order of last year's standings, even though we probably don't expect them to turn out that exact same way. It's just an easy way to do it. I will start off with the team that, other than the Hornets, finished at the bottom of the Western Conference, the Sacramento Kings. This summer, they stayed pretty stagnant. I mean, they obviously drafted Thomas Robinson, who fell to them, Cleveland passing on him for Deion Waiters because they reached for Tristan Thompson last year. So Thomas Robinson at five, which was a steal. A lot of people talking about him going number two. Signed Aaron Brooks for a crazy cheap contract compared to what people thought, you know, actually compared to what he probably would have got if he just waited out the lockout and didn't go to China last summer.
Right.
And then they made a trade for James Johnson, an ex-first-round pick. So essentially what you're looking at is you're looking at guards of Isaiah Thomas Jr., Tyreek Evans, Jimmer Fredette, Aaron Brooks, Francisco Garcia, your small forwards. You got James Johnson, John Salmons, and Travis Outlaw. And then your front court, you got Jason Thompson, Thomas Robinson, DeMarcus Cousins, and Chuck Hayes.
Hey, you forgot your boy at guard. You missed Marcus Thornton.
No, I didn't do it. I kind of did that on purpose, but yeah.
Okay.
No, you got Marcus. I was going to bring him up last, but he's kind of, another one of these guards that they have that are all kind of the same. So I guess before I get into my thoughts, what are your thoughts just when you kind of seen the direction of this team and this roster and what they have going into this year?
I mean, it's just a pack of chuckers. I mean, that's all it is. There is nobody on this team who will want to run an offense. Everybody's going to get the ball in their hands. They're going to throw it. Chuck Hayes is maybe the only one who'd be willing to do something like that. He's 29. He's 6'6" and a center. and you know, he is a complimentary player. You can't expect him to try to lead or run a team. But Fredette is going to chuck. Evans is going to chuck. Brooks has always been a chucker. Thornton, we don't even need to talk about him. We know what he is. John Salmons is a chucker. Did you realize that Thornton is the second highest paid player on this team? I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, and again, they're not even a team with tons of flexibility moving forward.
Right. They're just a bunch of mid-level players running around. But, I mean, they're big men who possibly have the biggest – that's what I like about this team. Cousins and Robinson maybe have the highest level of potential. If I was building this team and that was what I had to work with, those were the two – I'd be focusing on trying to figure out some way to use those two guys and building a team around them. And that's not what's happening here.
Yeah. See, I had the exact opposite reaction. When I was really thinking about if I was the GM, I mean, first of all, this is a mess. There's a new stadium being built in Seattle. The Maloofs are just playing games with the fan base at this point. I think that's going to be a distraction all season. But even if it was just on the court, a guy like DeMarcus Cousins, to me, I see a lot of Zach Randolph, something like I really think that he'll finally mature and put it together when he's 27, 28. But I think he's going to cost some franchise close to $100 million by then, who's going to get frustrated and trade him, and he's going to bounce around a little bit before he really reaches his potential. To me, I don't think there's any time over the next couple of years where DeMarcus Cousins is going to have higher trade value than he would have had this summer. I just don't think he's a guy that you win with, and especially if I'm bringing in somebody like Thomas Robinson. Like you said, you have all these chuckers, these immature guys, a guy like Marcus Thornton, who we had Jerry V on a couple weeks ago, finally confirmed with us what, you know, we all kind of knew of how the Hornets just had to let Marcus go because he wasn't falling in line with the team plan. You have 5, 6, 7 of those type of players, and then you bring in Thomas Robinson, who, you know, is a great team first guy, who do you think is more likely to affect who? Do you really think a rookie is going to go into that locker room and those guys are all going to step up and mature and, you know, all of a sudden reach their potential and play team ball? I just don't. I would have went the other way, and I would have got the most possible for DeMarcus Cousins. I think Charlotte would have given you the number two pick for him. And then let me build around MKG and Thomas Robinson and get rid of some of these chuckers and just try to, you know, go with a totally different style of basketball. But
right. I mean, I'm not telling you I like Cousins, but with what team they have right now, that's what I'd be trying to do. Trying to turn Cousins into something now. But, I mean, you're right. And actually, you said, you know, you think Cousins might end up like Zach Randolph. You know, I see just as much chance that Cousins ends up being Derek Coleman.
Yeah.
Where, you know, his talents, everybody always loved, but he just didn't like playing basketball. And he didn't like playing disciplined basketball.
Yeah, and I mean, you take a look at his raw numbers, and they look pretty impressive. I mean, you're talking about 18 points, 11 rebounds, you know, a steal and a half a game, a block per at almost 22. But again, he's one of those guys. He's a big that gives you 1.1 points per shot. Like, and that's what the three bigs, that's what the guys who take the vast majority of their shots, Cousins, Thornton, and Evans, I'll give you 1.1 points per shot and don't play any defense. So they obviously give up more than that on the other end. I look through Cousins' game logs and I just see too many games where there's a game against San Antonio where he put up 25 points, but then I look and he took 24 shots.
Right.
And, you know, it's just something where, I mean, I think he's one of the most talented low post scorers in the NBA, but I just think he's going to play well enough for him to get a couple of coaches fired, for the Kings to have a gun to their head when it's time to pay him, give him a max contract, and he's always going to show flashes of potential, and then he's going to have a couple games where he disappears, or he's going to have some kind of incident with a fan or a coach or, you know, off of the court. I would sell at its highest point, but I don't know. That's just my thing. Is I think they have a guy like Thomas Robinson coming in, and I find it very unlikely that he's going to affect the culture in a positive way. I think he's going to get very frustrated his first couple of years in Sacramento.
Yep. All right. So next team from the bottom is our good buddies, the Golden State Warriors, who every single year, everybody is absolutely certain that this is the year the Golden State Warriors will make it back into the playoffs. And it even happened briefly with Baron Davis. But again, you look at this team, and it can seem really scary if you think about everybody being healthy and everything falling into the right place. Because you have a starting lineup of Bogut and Steph Curry, and Harrison Barnes, if you want to pencil him into that, Klay Thompson, who looked very good, and David Lee. And those five players are all extremely good players when they're fully healthy and playing at the top of their games. And then you throw in, like, Brandon Rush, who's pretty solid, Carl Landry is pretty solid. I mean, Jarrett Jack, if you like him. I mean, there's a lot to like about this team. Again, I still think they're going to end up in the mid-30s and miss out on the playoffs. And the number one reason is, you know, Biedrins, I don't think Biedrins is as injury-prone as people, well, I mean, obviously he's as injury-prone as people give him say he is because he's missed a lot of games. I don't think his particular injuries are ones that you should expect to repeat. Because if you remember back in Denver, Nene had like 5 years in a row where he missed like 40 to 60 games every year. And it was always because of a freak accident. And since then, he hasn't missed almost anything. I think Bogut's the same sort of thing. He took a hard fall, shattered his wrist. He's done things that have been very strange to get his injuries recently. So I expect him to come back. Steph Curry, I drafted him on my little team, and I was cringing the entire time. It was Steph Curry, Ty Lawson, and I had those two guys to pick from. And I typed in Ty Lawson to take him because I have more of a feeling that he'll be healthy. And then I went back to Steph Curry because I like Steph Curry's, you know, overall package a little better. But even if you say this entire team is going to be healthy, if you take just Steph Curry, just David Lee, Klay Thompson, and Harrison Barnes, you have one of the worst defensive groups in the entire league right there. And yes, you have Andrew Bogut, who's a very good defensive center, backing them all up. But Barnes was a bad defender in college. It's not going to change in the NBA, especially not for the first couple of years. And the rest of those three guys, they're terrible defenders. So do I really think that this team is going to be suddenly playoff worthy? No, I think it's going to be another also-ran that you know has enough explosive offensive games that it probably will be on the bubble for a long time, but won't make it. What's your take on the Golden State Warriors? Something similar? Or are you more impressed with them?
Yeah, I try to think, okay, if I'm coaching this team, how does my offense work? Like, okay, so a dirty little secret about Bogut, a lot of people talk about, you know, the injuries, if he could stay healthy, blah, blah, blah. He's actually been declining as an offensive player over the past couple of years, maybe partially in part because of the elbow injury. I mean, he shot in his last full healthy season, he shot 44% from the line. This was a guy who was a good free throw shooter coming into the NBA. His field goal percentage has drastically dropped. I mean, his field goal percentage has dropped about 14%. Over the past 3 years. You're talking about a guy who shot 58% from the field to a guy last year who shot 45%. Mm-hmm. So is he the center of my offense? No, he's a good passer in the low post, but I can't really do that because he's not a guy that teams are going to have to double team. He's not a big enough threat. Can I play the pick and roll game with David Lee anymore? I don't know. Maybe Steph Curry's okay in the pick and roll, but he doesn't really have the speed to – you know, to really worry the defense to where it stops them from going over. So I don't know if that's their offensive system. I honestly think their best offensive player is Klay Thompson, but do they really build the offense around him? So what I see is just a lot of guys who could get shots and could be good supplementary players, but I don't see – I can't see what their offensive philosophy is going to be in the half court. So I honestly think I see them taking a big step back offensively. Where I do think they'll be all right is depth. I mean, we talked about how the Hornets, the fall from third to fourth, you know, that Golden State second five really isn't bad. If you're talking about Jack, Brandon Rush, a guy that, you know, Dell has been trying to get his hands on for years now. Richard Jefferson, who, you know, could be decent in 15 to 20 minutes. Beadrinse and Landry. I mean, that's not a bad second five. Draymond Green, by all accounts, you know, they had this rookie symposium, and he was, you know, by far, according to everybody's accounts, the standout leader, the most motivational. Just I could see him being like an Eduardo Nahara type. To me, they just have a lot of depth and a lot of bodies. A guy in Charles – I mean, Draymond Green and Charles Jenkins are going to be their 11th and 12th men. And honestly, I think both of those guys would get significant time on the Hornets.
Right. So here's the one thing that I would say, and I'll ask you and the listeners – you have Ryan Anderson, Anthony Davis, and Eric Gordon. Would you trade any of those players for any player on Golden State?
I guess I could think about it more and more. It'd be really tempting to switch out Eric Gordon and Klay Thompson just because of one, the injury issue, and two, the contract. Getting a guy about $10 million a year cheaper, at least initially. I really think Klay Thompson has that kind of potential, but he's not a creator. I don't think he fits as well with Anderson and Davis. So I'd probably hold on to Eric Gordon, but if I'm starting from scratch in a league similar to what we did, I don't know who gets picked first, Clay Thompson or Eric Gordon.
Right.
But that would be the only one.
Yeah, and if you went so far as to say, don't even worry about contracts right now, this is just for this year, would you make any of those three trades? I would say no. I wouldn't want to. At one point, Steph Curry would be on my list as someone I would consider moving, you know, Eric Gordon for. But Curry's been, you know, his ankle's been paper mache.
And again, the defense is the difference between Curry and Eric Gordon.
Yep.
Krzyzewski even said multiple times during the Team USA practices that Eric Gordon was the best perimeter defender in those practices. Gordon's also, I think offensively they each have their strengths and weaknesses, you know, when you compare them against each other. But I think that defensively, Gordon is a 9 and Steph Curry is maybe a 4. So,
right. So, I mean, and that right there is all you need in my world. I mean, yeah, depth is nice to talk about, but there is that idea. I mean, the wages of win talks about it. It's fairly well proven that, you know, people always talk about big threes, but it is true that something like 70 to 80% of most over average production on any team that's a championship comes from three players. So if you have three players that none of them are a lock to be traded for any player on another team, that other team's not going to be better than yours. Not in the long run. Not any chance.
And that's what I'm saying. That's my problem with Golden State is they don't have three players. Like, they don't have I don't know how they fall in line. Like, I think that Klay Thompson thinks he's better than Steph Curry. And I think that David Lee thinks he's a better offensive option than Andrew Bogut. Like, I don't see how they fall in line. I don't see Harrison Barnes willing to do all the little things because he's the fourth, maybe fifth option in the starting lineup. Like, I think they have just too many above average players to really have a definite pecking order on that team. And I think that makes an offense really hard. It's really hard as a coach to be able to run an offense when you don't have a pecking order that kind of everybody on the team agrees with.
Yep. So once again, I think Golden State will be relegated to the team that every other team in the league wants to make a trade with because they think that Golden State will be ready to blow it up at any minute all year round, and you might be able to pick up one or two of those guys who are good but not great for pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Because honestly, every year I'm always like, let me look at Golden State. Hey, they got some pieces I might like. Like Darrell Wright was like my favorite last year. I was always like, how can I get my hands on Darrell Wright? Because Golden State doesn't need him. It's always got somebody. So again, this year I have the same sort of feel. Like Brandon Rush. Brandon Rush might be someone I could pry away from them. So,
yeah. Apparently all it takes for Darrell Wright is Jarrett Jack. But
right.
Just didn't want to. Okay, gut. Hornets finish ahead of or behind Sacramento?
Ahead of.
And ahead or behind Golden State?
Ahead of.
All right. I will agree with both. All right. Interesting. Those are our first two Western Conference teams. Went through our NBA rank. Also came to a consensus that my team that I built was better than yours. Is there anything else we got to cover here today?
No, I'm going to just go back and cry in the corner because we came to that consensus.
Yeah.
And then Dwight Howard's going to fly out of nowhere and spike your ball back into your face.
Always.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to In the Know. We'll be back next week with more Hornets chatter and, of course, another two teams in the Western Conference. Down by New Orleans, the land of red kings.